All right, Ruth 4. We'll finish up the book of Ruth today. We're looking at chapter 4. Boaz and Ruth, rather than rushing into marriage, waited for God to confirm that their desires matched his will. Boaz presented Naomi's other relative with the opportunity to buy Elimelech's property and bring Naomi and Ruth into his household. There is a outline of chapter 4, the summons, the symbol, the son, and the summary, all beginning in S. Who pulled our verse 1 through 6 to read?
That's me.
Okay, Ben.
In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man...
You in Ruth 4?
Oh, I'm sorry. Now Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer, of whom Boaz had spoken, came by. So Boaz said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down, and he took the men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." They sat down. Then he said to the Redeemer, Naomi, who had come back from the country of Moab, is selling a parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So now I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one beside you to redeem it. And after I come, and I come after you, and he said, I will redeem it. Then Boaz said, the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you will also acquire Ruth, the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead and his inheritance. Then the Redeemer said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, or I cannot redeem it.
Okay, thanks, Ben. If you did not get a handout, they're up on this table. Also, we got handouts for the other weeks, in case you were gone a week. So question number one, where did Boaz go to resolve the issue of who would be the kinsman for Ruth? Where did Boaz go? To the gate. What was significant about the town gate?
Where business was done.
Why? Why would that be the place versus, say, a government building or the temple even, for that matter?
Because everybody has access to it. It can be publicly witnessed.
It's a public place. Probably the walls were, I read one place where the walls could have been 3 to 6 feet wide, which provided a shade for them to sit under and conduct business. Witnesses were easy to find, people all the time strolling through. So, yeah, the town gate was a popular meeting place. I know growing up, some of the older gentlemen would go to the bank before there was a McDonald's. I had an uncle in Troy, he had a group of guys, they met at McDonald's every morning to drink coffee and probably did whatever business they were doing. So this was a public place, access to a lot of everybody, and that's where where Boaz gathered this group of elders. Now, were these old men or were these like wise men?
Yes.
You're correct. Probably they were some of the older men in town, but they were probably some of the wiser leaders of the town. So who did Boaz ask to sit as witnesses? I just sort of answered it.
Yeah.
Ten elders of the city. So what did Boaz first ask the other kinsmen to redeem if he wished? Sorry, Marie?
I don't think I'm
right. Okay.
A piece of land.
Yeah, he was supposed to, he said, ask him to redeem the parcel land owned or formerly owned by Elimelech. Y'all remember Deborah brought this out last week, why that was important. Those that were here, do you remember what her statement was, or reasoning was?
Because it was part of the law of the time to maintain the ownership of Israel.
Exactly.
To the Israelites.
Right. And if any land got out of the 12 tribes, then it's gone. So it was the responsibility of the guardian redeemer depends on your translation, they may use a different word, but that's whose responsibility it was to get it back. And what was the kinsman's initial answer? Verse 4. Do what?
Buy it if you're going to buy it, right?
Well, what did the kinsman say? What was his answer? When Boaz asked him if he would redeem the land, what did he say?
Yes.
He said he would, yeah. He was he jumped on it pretty quickly. But after the other kinsman had commented, what additional requirement did Boaz throw at him?
You
got to marry her. It's not just the land. You got, yeah. So sort of like Boaz used this bait and switch kind of thing, didn't he? but he was diplomatic about it. He held off and threw that second part in there later. So the kinsman was first approached about the land, and then Boaz said, well, if you do that, then you got to take Ruth with you. So verse 5, why was it important to maintain the name of the dead with his property? Again, is to keep the line going. So after this, what was the other kinsman's answer in verse 6?
I just got out of the doghouse with my wife. I don't want to be there again. I don't know.
What, Marie?
It would endanger the estate.
Yeah.
It would endanger what he had possibly. But it
Yeah, but the answer to question number 6 is he cannot redeem it, is what the verse says.
Why would it endanger his estate? Because I heard someone suppose that, maybe he got his estate through his marriage, through his wife, because his wife's family was the ones with property.
With the money, with the property.
And he's not sure of bringing another woman in the house, so he might have been a very wise person.
Yeah. Matter of fact, that was a follow-up question to number 7. Going back to number 7 real quick, Marie answered it. Why did the other kinsman say he could not be the redeemer? Because he didn't want to damage his inheritance. And the reason probably was he would have to give up some property, like you said, that may have belonged to his wife or some other family member of his, in his bloodline.
Yeah.
So that's the reason he backed out of that.
Any of a dozen reasons.
Yeah, and it's all speculation for the most part. He just said it would damage his inheritance. So, any questions or comments about verses 1 through 6? We're right on schedule. I go through and time my notes, and we're right on schedule. All right, who has verses 7 through 12? Okay, Marie.
Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself." And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses." Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah."
Okay. We talked about this in the earlier chapter. Verse 7 is in parentheses. When a verse is in parentheses, what does that mean?
Either it's an aside or there's questions.
There's questions whether this was in the original, and through the copying process, it may or may not have gotten dropped out at some point, and then someone put it back in. Or it can also be just a point of emphasis that the person copying this wants to kind of add to it. And since he's putting it in his own words, he puts it in parentheses saying this is not necessarily the original. This is my commentary on this one verse. So, but it's usually important stuff, so they left it in there. So, question number 8. What did the other kinsman do to show that he agreed Boaz should be the redeemer?
Took off his sandal.
Took off his sandal.
They had a real thing about feet.
This
covering.
Yeah. This was a legal way of showing someone, in this case, that he wanted out of this arrangement. And usually what I read was the sandal or shoe has to be made of leather. It's not made of leather, it's not binding. I don't know how true that was, that is, but...
Is that a joke?
Huh?
It's not leather, it's not binding.
I got it now. Yeah. So, who removed his shoe? So you're saying verse 8 says, and I agree with you, verse 8 says the Redeemer removed his shoe, correct? Is that what you're saying?
The kinsman Redeemer.
The kinsman Redeemer, yeah, Savior, whatever, however you want to word it. Who has Deuteronomy 25, 7 through 10?
Got that one too.
Okay.
Try to get this one right. If a man does not wish to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife should go up to the gate to the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to perpetuate his brother's name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of a husband's brother to me. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak to him. And if he persists, saying, I do not wish to take her, then his brother's wife shall go up to him in the presence of the elders and pull the sandal off his foot and spit in his face. And she shall answer and say, so it shall be done to the man who does not build up his brother's house, and the name of his house shall be called in Israel the house of him who has pulled his sandal off.
Okay. Some translations so that say the family of the unsandaled. So, according to Deuteronomy, the widow pulls the shoe off, or pulls the shoe off the kinsman. So I don't know which is actually proper, but here's two different examples of the same thing going on. What's funny to me is she also spits in his face. You usually see that in like mafia movies and stuff like that, where someone doesn't like what's going on, they'll spit. So if y'all ever seen that or heard about that, so it's just fun. It's just interesting to me that here in Ruth, the kinsman took the shoe off, but in Deuteronomy it says for the widow to take it off. So not her shoe, but take the kinsman's shoe off. So anybody have any more background on that?
So then I have a question.
Certainly.
I know in the, I believe in the Middle East, in the little time I spent over there, that there's a habit, if someone takes a shoe off and throws it at you, that's an insult.
Oh, really?
Is there any, do you know, have any background on that?
Not on that part of it, no.
And showing the bottom of the shoe, that was something that they taught us about our Arab culture. You never show the bottom of your shoe, it's an insult to the Arab people.
Oh, really? So even today that goes on?
Yeah. Whenever they took Baghdad,
yeah.
You saw them pull down the statue of Saddam.
Yeah.
You saw them run up and take their shoes and start slapping. That's an insult to the Arab culture, is to show the bottom of the shoe and slap with it.
Okay. I don't know why, other than what he just said. Yeah. Yeah.
Found its way back in the Bible.
Yeah. I'm sure that's probably where it started at some point, but... what did spitting in the face indicate?
Disgust,
contempt. This is what is done to the man who had not built up his brother's family line. It was just basically putting the guy down, saying, you know, you backed out, you're not fulfilling your obligation, and to us, you're dirt, so to speak. And after this process, then the widow was free to marry anyone she chose. She could go outside the bloodline if she wanted to. So, This also came with some other controversies. If the brother-in-law was under the age of 13, the widow had to wait till he became 13 before they married. If the brother-in-law was mentally incompetent, either because he is insane or deaf mute, the widow was forbidden to marry anyone else. So she was sort of stuck there. So number 9, Boaz reminded the elders that they had witnessed what two agreements? What two agreements did Boaz agree to?
Put on the land and got the wife.
Yep, got the land and the woman. So he was going to take care of both of them. What was significant about mentioning Rachel and Leah in verse 11? That's not a question on your sheets. When I thought about it 6 o'clock this morning when I was reviewing this.
Oh, Rachel and Leah were the mothers of Israel.
Exactly. Between the two of them, that's where the 12 tribes come from. Yeah.
Everybody.
So, yeah, everybody distinct came from them. Not everybody, but tribes, certainly.
Would that have been something that naturally was said as like a blessing, or was that something that was specific?
Reason their names were mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, just because, I mean, just in terms of law and,
yeah,
you know, what you would bless for someone, would that be something that was a generic, you know, saying that we hope this for you? Or do you think so? That
yeah, I think...
Normal blessing.
Yeah, yeah. What was beneficial and proper from Rachel and Leah... having a big family, and of course, like David just said, that's where the tribes of Israel came from. I think they're basically saying, we hope the same type of blessing for you.
Right.
Now, you know, you won't have 12 tribes come out of you. That's, you know, that's not prophecy, but, you know, a good blessed family.
But that's, so you think that would be something that was common, like after
could
like,
be, yeah,
marriage,
yeah,
you know, proposal, we hope the same for you.
Well, I think... anybody who knows this better than me, jump in. But most marriages back then, they, you know, hopefully they would multiply and, you know, blah, on and on and on they go. Big, you know, big families back then were not a big deal. I mean, they were wanted more than small families are. Marie, I see you. Yeah.
Because of what does come through,
yeah,
the genealogy.
Yeah, and we're going to get in that in just a minute. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm sure, the short answer is yes, I believe it would like a blessing. So, speaking of blessings, what blessing did the people desire for Boaz? Verse 12, offspring through Ruth. God had blessed Judah through his son Perez. People were asking God to bless Boaz in a similar way through Ruth's children. So why did the writer mention Perez? And at the end of the chapter, he actually starts a genealogy chain beginning with Perez. Why did he start with Perez? Anybody want to guess?
Well, he's the next one after Judah. I don't know.
Part of it was because Perez came from a Levirate marriage. There's an example there whereby the brother or relatives of the dead husband marries his widow. I think what I read was that was the example that this was not necessarily a direct bloodline. Perez's bloodline was not a direct bloodline, but it came through a Levirate marriage. So, any other comments on 7 through 12? Who has 13 through 17?
I do.
Okay, Jerry.
So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went in to her, and the Lord gave her conception. She bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without next of kin. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has borne him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her bosom and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David.
Okay. So why did the women say that Ruth was better for Naomi than seven sons?
Seven sons with no descendants, no longevity for a family.
Okay. First of all, what does the number seven signify in the Bible?
Perfection.
Completeness and divine perfection are the two kind of answers that you hear a lot of. Number seven is used 735 times in the Bible. There are seven major divisions of the Bible, seven annual holy days, and Jesus performed seven miracles on the Sabbath. Exodus 22 says an animal must be 7 days old before he's being sacrificed. 2 Kings 5 is where Naaman bathed about seven times in Jordan River, healed his leprosy. And of course, Joshua marched around Jericho for 7 days and then seven times on the seventh day. What does the seven sons signify? And David sort of alluded to it. Do we have other examples of seven sons in the Bible?
Seven sons of Sceva or something. I can't remember what happened with them.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, is that the one?
It's what?
When our son was in Sunday school, he thought it was hilarious. In class, he disrupted the whole class because they run out naked, they get beat up, and they run out.
In 1 Samuel 2, Hannah in her prayers, she mentioned seven sons. And Job had how many sons? Do we remember? In Job 1, he had seven sons and three daughters. So seven was, of course, a significant number, and especially if you had seven sons. And even today, there's something about the seventh son of a seventh son, isn't there?
There's a song.
Yeah. Was it Glenn Campbell that was the seventh son of a seventh son? Oh, well. I don't remember. I digress. Other than being his grandmother, what was Naomi's relationship with Ruth's son? Verse 16.
Nurse.
Nurse, guardian, nanny, as we would say today. Yeah. Why in verse 17... says Naomi has a son or a son of Naomi when it's Ruth's baby. Why is it referred to as Naomi's son? You just walked in on the end of the conversation. It goes back to the Levirate marriage, doesn't it?
Right.
Where this son is actually belonging to Naomi's son. So it would be like Naomi's grandson. So just a reference there to that. What was Ruth's son's name?
Obed.
Obed or Obed. And what does that mean? Does anybody know?
Worshipper.
Some translations or some commentaries would say serving or worshiping. But one I found mostly said worshiper. Of whom was Obed the father and grandfather? He's the father of Jesse, the grandfather of David. And we're going to get into that in just a second. According to a blog that I saw just a couple weeks ago from Leanna Davis, she calls Obed the other biblical baby of Bethlehem because Jesus the Messiah was born in the line of this David. And she referenced Romans 1:3. So, any other comments up to verse 17? All right, let's unpack this, as we would say. I did not have anybody read verses 18 through 22, but you can look at them, because I didn't want to put anybody through the effort of trying to pronounce some of these names. Maybe if Henry was here, he could do it, right? But you notice, as we talked about in verse 18, it begins with the family line of Perez. And then, of course, it goes through David in verse 22. Look at verse 21. NIV says, Solomon, the father of Boaz, Boaz the father of Obed. Why wasn't Mahlon's name mentioned? If this Levirate marriage meant that any offspring would go back to Mahlon in this incident, why wasn't Mahlon's name listed? Verse 21. Any suggestions? I see some hot heads nodding. Probably, and I'm just thinking out loud, because I'll present something here in a minute, that they're tracking the actual bloodline, not the ancestry line. So that's the kind of thinking here. We're tracking the actual bloodline. And as we get in, you've got a genealogy chart we're going to look at in a minute. And that's where we think we're going to do that. So verses 18 through 22 list a 10-name genealogy presenting the royal ancestry of David. We also find more detailed lists of Perez family in 1 Chronicles 2. And he talks about verse 12 actually says, Boaz begat Obed, and Obed begat Jesse. So why begin the list with the descendants of Perez? We answered that just a minute ago. It's just kind of a beginning point. And who was Perez's dad, father?
Judah.
We talked about that earlier too. So I did give you a chart, genealogy chart of Jesus. We find the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew 1, 1 through 17, and again in Luke 3, 23 through 38. What's the difference in the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew 1 and Luke 3?
Joseph.
One is through Mary, one is through Joseph. Anything else?
Huh?
It is very confusing. Anything else? It won't be on the chart. You have to go to the scripture. But yeah, Mary follows Solomon, or Mary's side of the family. Luke follows Nathan, which is Joseph's side of the family. The other thing is, if you actually go to these scriptures, Matthew begins with Abraham and works down to Jesus. Luke begins with Jesus and works backwards to Adam and God. Huh. Little trivia there.
Which of these, Matthew or Luke, which one does for Mary and which one does for Joseph?
Matthew does Mary, Luke does Joseph.
Okay.
Yep. But there's some... I shouldn't say discrepancy. That's not necessarily the word. Matthew is following the line of Joseph, Jesus' legal father, through David's son Solomon, while Luke is following the line of Mary, Jesus' blood relative, through David's son Nathan. Since there was no specific Greek word for son-in-law, Joseph was called the son of Heli by marriage to Mary, Heli's daughter. And that's in the actual scripture. Luke is a doctor, dealt with the mothers, so he traces the genealogy through Mary's family. The Hebrews, the people, never permitted genealogical tables to end with a woman, so it ended with the name of the husband and the father-in-law. Through either Mary's or Joseph's line, Jesus is descendant of David and therefore eligible to be the Messiah. So any way you look at it, Jesus, through David, it comes through David on either side. You can see there in that sort of first little section under Matthew, where it begins with Perez and goes down to Boaz, Obed, and Jesse. And then, of course, David, and then it splits off. So I just found that. Thought it would be good to throw in. Any questions or comments about Yes, sir.
So why is the, the number of generations on Solomon to get to Joseph far fewer than the number of generations from Nathan to get to the other Joseph?
I have no idea. Where are you starting at? Solomon? Yeah.
Right side,
between Nathan and Joseph?
Did his have younger kids? I
don't know. I don't know. Do not know. So, that can be your homework. Uh-huh. Any questions or comments about Ruth, the book of Ruth? Or the person of Ruth, for that matter.
What was her favorite color?
What was Ruth's favorite color?
You said it in question.
Okay, probably I'd say orange.
Orange.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Orange was not even a color until about a few hundred years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In fact, about 400 years ago, there was not a name for orange. It was called a yellowish red.
So, I guess so, yeah.
Boy, that was a sidebar, sorry.
I did. I was thinking of a joke. Is orange named after the color or the fruit?
I know the answer. It's the fruit.
The yellowish red. Right? All right, let's move on. 5 minutes. Oh, I can't hold y'all over today since I let you out early last week, right? All right, in conclusion for the book of Ruth, just a little short synopsis. Chapter 1, Ruth had nothing but her faith. Chapter 2, she lived on leftovers. Chapter 3, she received generous gifts. But once she belonged to Boaz, in chapter 4, everything he owned belonged to her. The book of Ruth offers more to readers than a familiar verse that is said during Christian marriage ceremonies. In a period when Israel was often unfaithful to God, a woman named Moab shows great faith to him, or in him. Boaz and Ruth approached marriage with complete trust in God. They followed his law, they maintained purity, and they moved ahead with confidence as God opened doors. They glorified him in their romantic desires, the result being God's blessing. The book of Ruth shows that what guardian kinsmen redeemers do for their relatives is part of Israel's duties and God's covenant with them. The story is a wonderful picture of how God watches carefully over every little detail so his grace may come to fruition and fully abound. Better than a Hallmark movie, there were no losers. All the main characters are winners. Only in God's plan of redemption do we live happily ever after. If you're familiar with the Bible Project videos, there's the website for that. Runs about 7 minutes. It basically gives you a review of the book of Ruth. If you want to look at a two-hour movie about Ruth, there's the YouTube link for that. Any questions, comments about the book of Ruth? Thank you. All right, that'll do it. Everyone have a safe week. Have a happy new year. And Gary will be again his minor prophets next week if he's well. If not, we'll come up with something. Thank you for your comments and participation.
Watching this.
Oh, we got three more days.
Yeah.